No, he is. He is.
Okay.
So he went on a podcast actually like a couple months ago. He's like, you guys can do this one since I was on the last one. So
How did it go on the last one? What did he like? What did he not like?
I think they I actually don't know. Will, did he say anything about it?
He didn't even tell me anything about it, so I'm guessing it's didn't go as well as this one is.
Hey, we're gonna crush it on this
That's a
one.
great one. That's a good save, Will.
Yeah.
We are consummate professionals on this podcast, and we don't do anything but the finest work.
And that concludes this episode of the podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. It's awesome. On this week's episode of the Selling Podcast, we are joined with a couple entrepreneurs. They've done an amazing job. After a 2017 trip to Thailand, they decided they saw something very unique and decided to open up a business. And it's a very successful business, as we will hear.
All right, we're recording.
With over 50 years and millions of worldwide traveled miles between the two of us, we have tasted defeat and relished in sweet, sweet victory. Looking for inspirational entertainment, motivation, and practical insights to drive your business? Welcome to The Selling Podcast. We're joined on this week's episode of The Selling Podcast with Porter Willis and Will Wright. Porter, Will, welcome to The Selling Podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, we're excited to be here.
I think we should probably mention the third partner in this little...
And Jameson, who is not here. Jameson Tanner.
Shout out to Jameson. Yeah. Poor Jameson. Jameson, we miss
he's
you.
Missing, he's like, missing all the fun.
He's like the stepchild today. He's just kind of off doing his own thing.
So, Scott, let me set this up. I met Porter when my wife and I actually went to their establishment, Fish Kiss. And I was fascinated. I really admired the idea. I thought it was fun. And it really fit in a college town. But what really got me interested is how it all started. And that's when I started talking to Porter, not even realizing that he was one of the owners when I first saw him. But then getting the story, and I thought, we've got to have him on the podcast because it is a fun story. So with that, I kind of want to punt it over to Will and Porter and let you guys kind of explain the backstory, how you got started
and what it is
and exactly what is this that we're talking about.
Yeah, for sure. So me, Will and Jameson and a couple of our friends in 2017, we had seen some cheap tickets to Thailand, and Jameson, actually, it's funny that he's not here because he's the one who had kind of the connection there. He served his LDS mission in Thailand. And so he was kind of our guide, and we found some cheap tickets, and we went over there for about a month. And
yeah, you can only do that when you're 20 years old.
Yeah,
not married.
Yeah, we even quit our jobs to go out there.
Yeah, it was kind of sad
move, but it worked out great.
Yeah, I worked for about 3 weeks for this one company, and they're like, "What do you want to do with the money you got here?" And I said, "I want to go to Thailand." And then they're like, "Okay." So then I feel bad. Sorry, Clearlink, but I quit. I quit and went to Thailand for a month. But then as we were there, there's like a bunch of night markets, which are always super fun. So every night we try to go to a night market. The atmosphere was super cool. Always cool lights and music playing. And we saw these tanks of fish at a couple of different markets. And we decided that we'd try it because we saw some other tourists try it. They're laughing their head off. Like, these little fish were nibbling on people's feet. And I'm super, super ticklish. And so I was a little nervous. But they put all three of us in there. They didn't really wash our feet or anything. They just put us in a bucket full of other people's feet that they've been in. So once we got in the tanks, we started laughing our heads off. And it was just felt like, Will, what do you? I don't even know how to explain it. Really, how would you explain it?
I'd say it feels like putting your feet in McDonald's Sprite. You know, like the McDonald's Sprite that's just like electrifying. Yeah. It's kind of like that, but all over your feet. It's pretty wild.
That is awesome.
That's a great description. So when you saw groups of tourists,
mm-hmm.
and you, the thought process of what is this? Did you know what it was you're going to try?
So I had seen it before while I was in Denmark. And so I had done it once there, but nobody else we were with really knew it. And so I kind of helped convince them, you know, like, I've done this before. You're not going to die. It feels good. It's a little wild, but it feels good.
They're not piranhas. You're good.
Right, right.
So, okay. So here's where I got stuck. So when I was in Asia, in China specifically, I did hot cupping. And so they put a little alcohol inside of a glass cup. They lit the glass cup on fire. They held it there and then they put it on your feet and massaged your foot with the hot cup. Really cool experience. As they were doing it, my immediate reaction was, this will never fly in the US because of OSHA, because of these legal. And so my immediate mind went to, oh, this is great. I should take it back, but it's never going to work because blah, 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 blah. Did you, when your feet were in there, what were your thoughts of, hey, this would be really cool to take back? And then did it go legal? Did it go? How does that mental process work for you?
Wait, before we get into that, I've got to add something here. Scott's looking at it of why this won't work in the United States. And my thought process was, put in baby nurse sharks and you can really freak some people out.
just have them swimming around there.
That's so funny.
All right. So let's talk about that. How did you get around all the health code restrictions and all the regulations?
Well, first off, did you even think about all that stuff while you were
over? Yeah.
Well, yeah. So, sorry, go ahead, Will.
I was going to say, I mean, short answer, no. We didn't really think about it at the time. We were just like, this is awesome. And we didn't really get into kind of the more legality of it and how it's working out until we got back home. And then at that point, it was just research, research, research. Like, we were looking everywhere. We were calling health departments, trying to figure out the legality. And kind of what it boiled down to was, in Utah, there really wasn't any set codes for fish spas or anything about these fish. And so we were able to work with the health department and come up with some really strict safety procedures and precautions that pretty much make it safer than even going to a regular pedicure where somebody's using tools on your feet.
So you helped create the health code around this specific piece?
It's not the official health department's health code, but we did share it with the health department and showed them all of the precautions and steps that we were using and all the advanced types of filtration for the water, for example. And they pretty much green-lighted it at that point. And so I'm sure going forward, they'll refer to that if new fish spas start to pop up.
Yeah. At first, we called and they're like, what do you classify this as? And we're like, there's like a pool and then the spa. And so we're like, oh, maybe it's pools because it's like with fish. And they're like, okay, well, if you have to classify it as a pool, you have to have so-and-so amount of gallons of chlorine in it. And we're like, okay, well, we can't do that, so it's not cool anymore. And so we kind of had to find like the gray area. That sounds kind of weird that we were searching for the gray area, but there we really didn't classify in anything that was given to us. So we kind of just went as a spa. And I think a lot of things, like your cupping, like I think you'd that type of thing would be the first of its kind as well, so you'd have to kind of make your own thing. So if someone came after you, like, I don't know, I feel like a lot of things originate in Asia and come over here.
Yeah. Well, especially a lot on the holistic side of medicine. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So who was the first one to say, to really kind of back up and say, whoa, guys, I don't know that this is going to work. Who's the first one? And then how did it go from there? How did the rest chime in to say, no, we're doing this, let's go for it?
Well, the sad part about this is I don't think our first thought of that was until we were about 1 month into building out the building and each had about 8 credit cards.
All right. So explain that, because once again, your mind is working differently than mine, which makes sense. And it makes also sense while you are a successful entrepreneur and I'm still dabbling around.
You know, we were kind of like, we were so gung ho. It was all about, you know, ask for forgiveness, not permission. And so we just started making things happen as fast as we could. And so we weren't as cautious as we probably should have been. But I feel like a big takeaway for me from that was, like, if you're not just going guns a-blazing full speed, somebody else is going to, and they're going to beat you to it.
So to give ourselves credit a little bit, we did do some market research. So I worked for, I was managing a drink delivery truck thing at the time. And as I would deliver these drinks, we had a little paper that we created with a survey. And I'd give one to everyone I delivered to, like a huge group of, a huge medical office. And I'd have everyone fill it out. And it was just asking, like, have you heard of it? Would you try this? How much would you pay for it? What would you add? What kind of atmosphere would you expect? And we had quite a bit of those. We had, I think, over 500 surveys where, and Jameson and Will had gone to malls and asked random strangers. So we had done some research. And I think the reason we were so gung-ho about it is the experience we had of how crazy and fun it was. And then also seeing our market research through these surveys to be able to say, like, okay, this is something people would like.
I like, and you got to understand in Provo, Utah, the dating scene is kind of dominant, right? And everybody's looking for that kind of activity to do on a date. But what really interests me, and you mentioned it just a second ago, how much confidence do you have in an idea to take out 8 credit cards? Tell me a little bit about that. How did you fund the startup of this program?
Go ahead.
we talked to a lot of people.
You guys have started laughing before you even answered the question. That's when you know it's just like, it's so much fun.
You know, we had done, like Porter was saying, we had done a lot of market research. I was substitute teaching high school while I was in college. And so
let me insert this. He was known as Sexy Sub. Just so everyone who listens knows. If you're listening, Sexy Sub is here.
Oh my. It was a little weird. I started when I was 20, so I was like the same age as the seniors. It was really weird. But
I actually asked a substitute teacher out on a date when I was a senior in high school.
Oh my gosh.
You did.
Did she go?
I've never heard that story. Wait, so, hold on. Right, Mike.
No.
We'll ask a question that you didn't hear that we need answers to. We'll ask it again if you please.
Did you actually go on this date? I'm super curious.
No, she turned me down. She said she couldn't date a student.
Makes sense. For legal reasons.
Yeah, at least you tried.
Yeah, at least that's the excuse she gave.
So we got her. So we got her number and asked her out after class.
When she's off the clock. No, so I was substitute teaching and I was giving out these surveys to all of my students and having them fill out. I don't even know if I was allowed to do anything like that, but we were just getting lots of market research saying this is going to be big. And so we were very confident. Sadly, the other banks and credit unions and angel investors and our neighbors and family members weren't as gung-ho as we were. And so I remember one time we were at the bank and we were talking to someone and we were explaining the idea about a fish spa. And I could see the guy was holding back like so much laughter that he was crying. He was like, like tears were coming out of his eyes. And so he stops us and he goes, hold on. He's like, so at your fish spa, people will bring their fish to you and you'll like massage them or what?
Yeah, they got like a spa for fish. It was so funny.
He could not figure out what was going on.
And I thought we had a hard time explaining our backpack system.
Because, people hadn't heard of it here. And so like a fish spa just sounded so weird to them.
So what were some of the first turndowns? Like what are people saying no to?
So my first turn down, at least, so I have everyone has a wealthy uncle. I think everyone has that uncle that's wealthy. If you don't have one, you're him. So I called my uncle and I told him my idea and we talked through some logistics about the business. And I think he kind of knew what I was going for towards the end. He knew my purpose of calling him about it. And I said, well, is this something that you'd potentially, you know, help your sweet nephew out? It's smart of him, but he doesn't do stuff for family. He doesn't give money to family for that kind of thing. Luckily, I had another uncle who did give us a little bit of money, but we did have to get there's like 14 credit cards that we had to get just because we had so many rejections of no one would give us money. No banks would give us money. They just said, you don't have any background. I was 20 years old at the time. I guess I wouldn't trust myself if someone came to me and was like, hey, I want to start this business, but no business background really. So,
and not only that, but there's not even a comparable business.
Exactly. So there's nothing, there's nothing to base it off of except for things in Thailand and everything in Thailand. We paid like $2 maybe to do it in Thailand, mm-hmm. something like that.
Okay. So walk us through the timeline, because apparently you started a business at the absolute worst time to start a business in potentially American history.
So actually, are you talking about COVID?
Yeah, absolutely.
So we actually, so when we went in 2017, we came back, the day we got back, we actually, while we were in Thailand, scheduled an appointment with the Business Development Center with UVU. So the day we got back, we went and met with them. This is in 2017. And we started talking about the business, started doing the market research. And then we actually started in 20. So we are all in school and we'd meet after class. And then in 2018, we actually signed the lease on our place. And for a month straight, we built out the whole thing. We spent 90 hours a week working on this thing. And I had $2 to my name. I couldn't afford a Subway sandwich. I had to have Jameson. I owe him a Subway sandwich. So he paid for my Subway sandwich that day. But we worked 90 hours a week that month because we had a month to build it out. We actually got the call from the landlord saying we could move in a month early than we had anticipated. So we
were spoken to the health opening. Department by then.
We had, yeah. So it was like, so that was in April of 2018 that we were building it out. And we had spoken to them about 2 months prior, probably. But we just had been, and I didn't know anything about like any sort of construction framing, anything. So it was a lot of YouTube videos. There was a day where we rented.
Wait, I'm actually. You guys built it out yourself?
We did. And I am surprised at like
and these it's still
companies
standing.
That rent out construction things to strangers, because they will rent about anything to about anyone. But we watched a lot of YouTube videos, and I spent a whole day grinding concrete. You know, I think for the next week, I was still kind of bouncing in my walk after the grinding concrete.
And the reason why we had to get it all done in 1 month, all the construction, plumbing, electrical, was because we didn't have enough money to pay the next month of rent. So we really had to get some cash flow coming in.
That's awesome. So where did the credit cards come into it?
So the credit cards we used for the build out, the fish, but the rent we had to pay by check. And so we couldn't use the credit cards for that, but we used them for everything else at the beginning. Just because we had, like Porter was saying, we had no working capital. We had all just quit our jobs and lived in Thailand for a month. And so we really had no money. So we applied for these credit cards with ridiculously high interest rates. That didn't start for a year, and then we just started buying material and going to work every day, all day and all night.
That shows an extreme amount of confidence in what you're doing. I really like that.
And fairly large risk taking as well.
I was going to say, maybe not so much confidence as halfway through we're like, oh, we gotta see this through, we're on the streets.
Right.
okay, so how did that happen? Because there's always a point in the initial stage of starting something where you realize it's a huge slap in the face and you're like, wait, what are we doing and how far into this are we? Well, maybe we should back out.
That happened, like,
we had
every
a couple
day.
Of those. Yeah. I was gonna say there was one day time. Actually there was one day where me and Jameson had put the sealant on the new done concrete that we'd stained and everything. Took us all day. And we just put on the sealant and we were going to go to lunch. And it was white when you put it on. So like when we come back, it's going to be dry. It's going to be clear. But when we came back, it was still white. And we're like, oh my gosh. So we didn't let this concrete, since it's so porous, we didn't let it dry long enough. And so it sealed in the moisture. And we're like, are you, we like broke that. And there was one day where Will was outside. I went outside to check on him. He's just like leaning against the ladder, like tears. Jameson was in the other room with tears. And I was just like, oh, what are we doing?
In my defense, I hadn't slept in like 2 weeks. So I was a little emotional.
Understandable.
Okay. So how do you get out of that one? Sorry, Mike. I just to continue. No. How do you break out of that? Like your partners are in tears, totally normal. How do you leave that and say, you know what, we're not shutting down. We're moving forward.
I think just seeing the overall, I think kind of going back to what we know is still true is that there's a lot of interest in it, and kind of going back to our experience of like, we know this is cool, like something we have, we know people think it's really awesome from our research. And we've had friends, as we were building it out, we had friends come in and be like, oh my gosh, it's looking so good. Like, you guys are doing awesome. So I think a support system is super good. And I think even between us partners, some of us had worse days than others. Like one day I had a horrible day, but Will and Jamie, thank goodness for them during all this. Like, they would pick me back up, and same with, you know, Will, if he had a hard day, me and Jamie would pick him up. So I think it's just the support system of like, hey, let's see the big picture here. Like, it's just a bump in the road. So
yeah, lots of goofing around, lots of jokes, trying to pick each other's spirits up. And we really had, we really had no choice but to finish. Like, we, it was either that or bankruptcy, because we couldn't pay back those credit cards.
Well, did that ever cross your mind, knowing that you had an out, because you're very young, and so a bankruptcy is not going to destroy the future for you? Did you ever give that some consideration?
We had talked about it.
Yeah, we did. We said this, if all else fails, you know, we're still young enough where it doesn't affect us too much, which is good. So we did think about that, but it still was really scary. I'm glad it was scary for us, because it really pushed us.
Yeah.
And I think before we even started, we kind of knew like, okay, if we sign this lease, if with these credit cards, like, we're going to have to do this. And so we knew the challenge, and sometimes that's what we like to do, I guess, is take big challenges that we like to set deadlines in order to kind of have that stress about it to really finish it.
So, Scott, I want to take them down a kind of a separate road.
Yeah.
Now that you've got it built out, you've maxed out all the credit cards, and you're kind of ready to go. Walk me through the first couple of days, because Porter, you and I, you shared something with me when I met you about how you got it started, and I thought it was really interesting.
Yeah.
Kind of walk us through that process.
So we had met with someone that we know, and he had helped with businesses, I think, previously, and he told us to do 2 weeks free. And we're like, what in the world? Like, I don't, like, we did not think that was smart at all, but we did.
You had, like, so much debt.
Yeah. We're like, we can't afford that. Exactly. So, but we did,
and
like
rent,
the idea.
And rent's coming up.
Exactly. And we did like the idea of like getting a lot of people in the door at first. So we actually did 3 days free. And the first day, I think we had about 300. And it was just me, Will, and Jamie, and we had matching shirts at the time. It was kind of like,
oh, that's goofy. Cute.
It was cute. That's a good word. And we're all working in there, washing people's feet, like breaking our back. It was just crazy. And it was packed. And then the next day, I think we had about 600. And then the next day, we had about 800. And so there was about a 2.5 hour wait by the third day.
And people waited.
People waited outside the door. It was absolutely packed in there. We had people sitting on the floor. It was crazy.
Wait, did the fish get full?
So the fish, Will, you can answer this one.
The fish just keep eating.
So they'll eat for a long time. And when they get full, they go rest at the bottom. And they digest their food pretty quick. And so within a few hours, they're ready to get going again. But by the end of that third day, everyone probably had about, I don't know, 4 fish per foot, because so many of the fish were just stuffed out of their minds laying on the bottom. But they still had a good time. I mean, the people had never done it before, and so even just a few fish on them was pretty wild.
Well, it was also free, so we're not... Yeah,
right.
So the customer experience, they're still getting it, which is great.
So were the people that showed up for the free days, were they the ones that you had handed out the survey questions to and kind of the word of mouth? Or where did they come from?
I mean, in Provo, it's kind of wild. Like, or I guess even Utah County, everyone loves free stuff. Like, word spreads like wildfire. So that first day got a few people in there, 300 people. And then everyone after that was friends and family of those first people who had come in.
So was it just the three of you working those 3 days?
It was. It was actually the three of us working the first,
like, 3 months. Yeah. I think my first paycheck was $200 from Fish Kiss. And I was like, I can afford a Subway sandwich and rent barely.
And that was luckily after, that was after a month.
We yeah, that was after
$100.
And unfortunately, due to time, this is where we will have to wrap up this week's episode of the Selling Podcast. We've been talking to Fish Kiss. We've been talking specifically to Will and Porter. Their entrepreneurial spirit is absolutely fantastic. And this is what we need every day in sales. We need to go out, create our own business, do something new, try something different, push ourselves a little bit further. We look forward to you joining us next week as we finish and wrap up our conversation with Will and Porter from Fish Kiss. Have a great week.
I always take my date there because it was super cheap. Then we go to Borders afterwards because Borders closed at 10. And if I liked her, we'd go find something else. And if not, it's like, bummer. It's 10 o'clock. They're closing. Let me just take you home. It was always a hard out.
It gave you a
Is Borders even still a place?
You know, I don't even know where that is. I haven't even heard of that.
Thanks, Will.
I lived in Provo for a long time.
Thanks, Will. It's called it was pre-Amazon. Last week on our podcast, we brought up the Smurfs. Will, are you familiar with the Smurfs?
You know, I've seen pictures of the Smurfs. I know they're like little blue guys, but that's about the extent of my knowledge right there.
Which you and Mike are in the same because Mike grew up with black and white television and you wouldn't even recognize
the whole world was black and white.